Blog Talk Radio.
And that's right, when the music cues, that means it's time for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Hope everybody's excited as we are. It's been an amazing 2 weeks already, and this is always one of the fun times of the week. We get to get together and talk about all this. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker. How are we doing this week, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
Doing great, Jeremy.
It is always good to get the gang back together, especially with all the fun things that are going on. You know, we'll have to talk about Adrian Peterson to this point, the drug policy and who could be reinstated or if they've even decided anything yet. We go over the injury roundup, which is quite extensive. I know a lot of fantasy football teams took a lot of hits, but the more important thing is getting these guys back healthy. The End the Zone trivia this week has to do with the number 63, and it pertains to a Bengals player. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, we're going to recap the picks we had last week. And I do have the updated standings, which we'll get into here in a second. The first game was the Steelers at the Ravens. For some reason, I took Pittsburgh in this game. I felt like it was going to be a big distraction, and you guys both took Baltimore. I should have went with the homer pick and not the lone wolf pick. Baltimore did win that one. New England at Minnesota. I don't know why me and Coach decided to bet against Tom Brady. He burned us with that one. Reggie, you got that one as well. Atlanta at Cincinnati, we will get more in-depth into later. We all homered out for Atlanta and probably should have took the week off. Cincinnati won that one. And we all homered out for San Francisco as well, who lost to Chicago in what was honestly one of the most boring games I've seen in a long time, even with the comeback. But that leaves our updated standings. Reggie's in the lead with, you are 6-2 to this point. You went 4-0 in the first week and 2-2 this week. Coach was 2-2 and 1-3 this week, so he's 3-5. And the caboose of this train would be me for sure, who went 2-2 in the first week and a big goose egg in this week. Apparently I was, I don't know, maybe you should check my caffeine levels or something, but I'm 2-6 overall. So, Reggie, I hope you feel good about being three games ahead. We're going to start closing the gap soon.
Well, you guys got a lot of work ahead of you, so I'm going to start putting the pressure on you guys a little bit more.
But I sent you guys, or we were talking about some of these games that we're going to pick for this upcoming week, and we'll go ahead and get that out of the way right now so we can get into some of these just really big issues, honestly. The first game we are going to pick, as you know, not just because we do the Falcons on show, but we are going to pick the Falcons games all year long. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to come in on Thursday night to face the Atlanta Falcons here in the Georgia Dome. Coach, who you got in this one?
Believe it or not, Jeremy, I'm going to have to stay with Atlanta. I'm going to stay with Atlanta just because they got to get this nasty taste out of their mouth called the Cincinnati Bengals. I think right now they can't afford to lose against Tampa Bay because they're a divisional opponent, if I'm not mistaken. So
yes,
it's a quick turnaround. It's a short week, and they need a win. So I'm going to go with Atlanta.
Reggie, just for the sake of the show, I'm going to ask you, but I feel like we're going to homer out on this one. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going with Atlanta on this one. I won't even restate Coach Hill's comments because they're spot on with what I was thinking as well.
Yeah, and as I've followed Tampa Bay for many years, and I hate that damn cannon, and I'm glad they're not playing in Tampa because I hate hearing that thing go off. I want to stuff something in it where it won't go off. But, yeah, I got Atlanta in this one. And, you know, lucky for all the end zone fans, Reggie, I know you go to all the games, but I'll actually be there Thursday night as well, and I'm going to try to go a little early and maybe challenge our friend Mark Cooper to some cornhole or something maybe. Try to get there early and show him that, that we're gamers as well as reporters. But, yeah, we're going to homer out on Atlanta there. I feel like last week they kind of got caught with their pants down, so to say. Didn't really see it coming. We'll go over it a little more later. But, yeah, I think they're going to beat Tampa Bay here. Moving on to the next game, we have the Dallas Cowboys. We'll be going to St. Louis to take on the Rams. Reggie, who do you have in this one?
Actually, you know what? I'm going to go with Dallas on this one. Despite, I know that St. Louis has kind of got a few injuries on the defensive side, and that's probably the least weak spot. I just think they have no answer at quarterback right now, so they're not going to be able to generate any offense whatsoever, and I think Dallas is going to run away with this one.
Okay, Coach?
I agree. I think Dallas caught momentum in this last game. They have a very stout running game in Murray. I think Romo has picked up a sense of urgency now. I think this last game proved it. I don't think with them losing Howie Long and Howie Long's son, Jake,
Chris,
if I'm not mistaken.
Chris.
Is it Chris?
There.
Okay, I'm sorry, Chris.
No,
thank you for correcting.
No, I'm sorry. It is Jake.
Jake, okay.
Chris is his brother who plays for Philly or Chicago, one or the other.
Correct. I think with them losing Long and don't really have that pass rush that they want on both ends, I don't think they have enough, and they don't have a backup where Sam's could have come in and helped them at this particular point. They don't have that. So I got to go with Dallas in this one as well.
I want to go with Dallas, but I don't know. I still like St. Louis's defense better, and I still think Dallas is a huge mess with the possibility of being a dumpster fire. I feel like they're going to get so excited that they scored all these points, they're going to forget that it was DeMarco Murray running all over the place that set it all up. I really hope Romo doesn't throw as many interceptions as he typically might, because he's a lot better than his stats will show you. But, you know, give me St. Louis in this one. If for nothing else, their third-string quarterback or whatever that came in was actually pretty good. Now to, I guess, the juicier game of the week, depending on where you live. But we get a Super Bowl rematch. It will be the Denver Broncos going to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Coach, who you have in this one?
It's going to be hard for me to go against Seattle in this game. I think still that they're the more physical team on the defensive side of the ball. I think there'll be some tricks that it'll go down to the wire. I don't think you can go wrong choosing either team, but I think it's just you got to beat the champs for me.
All right, Reggie.
Same here. The toughest one to pick for me. But Seattle, especially with some of the recent comments coming out of the San Diego camp in regards to Richard Sherman, and he's not the cover corner and shut down corner and shout. I just think it's just going to incite this team even more to go out and prove that they are the champs. And I'm like Coach Hill, you got to beat them. So I go with Seattle all the way.
My whole problem here is so far I'm not that impressed with Denver and their offense. Yeah, they look about as good as they normally are, but they're not showing me any breakout potential. They're showing me that they can hang with people, not necessarily pull out the win when they really need to. But on the flip side, as much as I don't like Seattle, I give them mad respect for the way they play. Except for, I was really happy. I can't lie about that one. I was really happy that San Diego was able to pull out the victory there. You know what? Give me Peyton Manning, and depending on if that drug policy goes, Peyton Manning and Wes Welker for the win here. If for nothing else, I need the wins and the picks. But give me Denver on this one just to be a little different. Who knows? Maybe Von Miller will get to meet Russell Wilson up close and personal a few times.
Ooh, going against the home team.
I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, we'll see if I learned mine. I probably haven't yet. Last game, I decided to throw this up here because this is probably two teams that we haven't really spoken a whole lot about except for maybe talking about a quarterback here or there. But it's a divisional game. Both these teams are off to a pretty good start, and they're actually showing signs of, you know, they could potentially make an okay run. That would be the Baltimore Ravens are going to go up to Cleveland and play the Browns. Reggie, who do you have in this one?
Ah, it's a tough one. And it's tough only because I like the energy that Cleveland is showing. And Brian Hoyer is playing just lights out of his mind. I still think Baltimore may have done what I think Atlanta has done in that, you know, they expended a lot of energy in this last game. So I'm going to take Cleveland. I'm going to take Cleveland in this.
Okay, Coach?
I'm taking Cleveland just for the fact that Baltimore doesn't have a Ray Rice, although the backup is pretty good. You're missing still that big piece of element of an offense.
Yeah, and I don't know if this will ever happen again on a team like this, but I think, you know, I've got Cleveland as well. I like the play of Hoyer. I like the fact that if something happens to Hoyer, you know, God forbid he gets injured or something like that, that I feel like Manziel can step in and at least make a couple plays. And their defense is, I mean, them and Buffalo, I predicted Buffalo to be good, but I didn't realize Cleveland was going to be this good. They may be a top five, top six, seven, eight, somewhere in there defense. You know, I think they're going to hold Flacco to just a handful of yards. So I guess we're going to homer out for the Browns. But to recap those, we are in agreement that Atlanta is going to take care of Tampa Bay. We are in agreement that Cleveland is going to beat Baltimore. You guys both have Dallas, and I have St. Louis in that one. I have Denver, and you both have Seattle. So maybe we can make some ground here or there, and maybe people actually start trusting our picks. But, I mean, in these first 2 weeks, there's been so many kind of chaotic finishes and things we just didn't see coming that, you know, we're not alone in missing a lot of picks. I believe I heard Rich Eisen talking earlier on his podcast from last week that their week one, they were, I think he was 7-9, and he's in a pick'em league. So, he said over two-thirds of the pick'em league had better stats than he did. So if I can keep up with Rich Eisen and Dan Patrick and those guys, I feel okay about it.
Tell yourself whatever you have to tell yourself, Jeremy.
One of the things I found interesting, guys, is that all of the teams that played big games in week one, with the exception of New Orleans, and I think New England, everybody else lost. So I think everybody, you know, pretty much put it all on the line in that first game coming out of camp, rivals, divisional, you know, divisional matchups. And the second week, it's what I pretty much predict. You know, normally in the second week when you have this, it's hard to get up again for that type of game, so you normally slip around 2 and 3 and try to bounce back at 4.
Definitely so. And I have the standings pulled up in front of me here. We'll just real quick, short answer this one. We'll do the biggest undefeated team, biggest surprise undefeated team in the AFC, and then we'll do the NFC. In the AFC, oddly enough, there is one team from each division that is currently not lost a game. That is the Buffalo Bills, the Bengals, the Texans, and the Broncos. Which of those four do you guys see as the biggest surprise so far?
For me, it's definitely the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo.
I didn't see it coming this early, but it's good to see for a small market team to really be showing up like this.
Yeah, definitely. I think Buffalo has to be, because Cincinnati's been in the playoffs the last few years. The Texans are kind of surprising, but, I mean, it's a similar boat to the Bills. Got a real good stacked young defense. As long as the offense can score points, they're going to have a chance at any game. But the fact that Buffalo is not only in first place, but that they're ahead of New England is just baffles me. In the NFC, there are the 2-0 Eagles after their win last night, the 2-0 Panthers, and the 2-0 Cardinals. Which one of those is like the bigger surprise?
For me, I'm going to have to flip it a little bit, Jeremy. None of those teams are surprising to me that they're 2-0. They have some success. I think my surprise in the NFC is by far the New Orleans Saints being 0-2.
Coach?
For me, I have to agree with Reginald. I think that I thought New Orleans would most definitely be competing right now, coming off the Atlanta game and then, you know, the shocking loss that they had this past week is saying something in New Orleans right now. But I must admit that Philadelphia is a team I'm a little shocked by. I did not think that Foles would adapt to that particular offense the way that he has, because he's a pocket passer. And last night I saw him do a few things different as far as running the ball on the rerun options and some of the sets that they had with double and double tight ends and splits with the backs out in the out at slot. So it was a couple of things that I found to be unusual that they did, and surprisingly, with the hurry up offense, they've been able to compete and push to the record that they have right now.
Even with Nick Foles' success last year, I've got a fantasy league championship with Nick Foles as the reason from last year, where this guy was lighting it up in his offense last year. So I'm a little surprised at that assessment, Coach.
Well, my thing is that, again, being that his coach, came out of college and he's run a lot of college offense, Nick had to make a quick flip. And because, again, like I said, he's not really a very athletic quarterback as far as the run is concerned. And some of the offense really dictates that he's going to have to do a little bit more than that if he really wants to. They're kind of still trying to stick it in the hands of speedy receivers and misdirections and outflanking it to one side of the ball. So, again, some of the short shotgun or the pistol, if you would, that they're running, I'm just a little shocked that he's doing that well, and still it's early. So by the time we get to week five, I like to reassess them to see where they are, because, again, some teams are going to say, well, we see some things that they didn't do last year as far as some of the sets are concerned, to see how they turn out.
Yeah, I have to agree there. Even though I believe I picked the Eagles to win the division, I'm still shocked that they come out 2-0, and especially the way they've come back. They're the only team in NFL history to be down by 14 points or more at halftime and come back on, I don't know if it's two straight games or the first two games of the season, but, I mean, kudos to them for keeping their head in the game and all that. But especially since we're in the Atlanta area, I'll kind of throw this out to you guys as well. Is it, at least from the Atlanta perspective, kind of being our home turf, whether the Falcons are your team or not, isn't it kind of fun and isn't it really hard to not grin really big to say that the Saints are 0-2? I have to agree with you there. I can't help but smile when I say that.
Man, I tell you, that's kind of been the saving grace for a lot of heartbroken fans from this past Sunday. I've noticed a lot of comments that says, yeah, we lost, but the Saints are 0-2. Even sitting in Paul Brown Stadium, I was keyed in on the Saints game and the score that was going on there. So I agree, Jeremy.
But, now we've talked about a lot of the fun stuff. Sorry to interrupt you there, Coach.
That's okay. I was going to say, I would agree. I think that that's probably the biggest surprise right now, is that they're where they are. And, if they're not careful, they can actually put themselves out of the playoffs really early with the kind of schedule they got coming up.
Well, it's funny you say that. I wish we had stat of the day music like some other shows. But one stat of this part so far is that I don't know if it's in the last 10 years or if this is all time, but of teams that start 0-2 on the season, only 12% make the playoffs that year.
Wow.
So, a lot of teams are in some deep holes right now.
There you have it.
But moving on, like I said, we've talked about some fun stuff. Now we have to talk about Adrian Peterson and this whole situation. Basically, it's all developed since our show last Thursday. It was brought to the media's attention that charges were filed against Adrian Peterson for possible child abuse, for a discipline his kid by using a switch, I believe, and striking the child a few times. And then the development since then, he was charged. The team come out and deactivated him for the game. His backup did well, but the story there, he was not with the team on Sunday. He was reinstated on Monday. Within hours of being reinstated, a second child abuse charge was pushed against him from one of his other kids. And then the rumor as of this morning was that maybe the Vikings are going to try to shop him around and trade him. First let's start with the initial issue. You guys have probably seen these pictures or at least heard about them. What's your take on this?
Coach, I'll let you take that one first.
Okay. I have not had an opportunity to physically see the pictures as evidence. I heard that, they were quite obvious that, the child was struck, relatively hard. to produce these type of injuries. My concern, here's my concern. My biggest concern is how the NFL has allowed the court of public opinion to come in and to dictate policy that is already etched in stone for them and the conduct of their players and members of the NFL as a whole. I think that in this case, this particular case, that the mother decided to make public these text messages that she had with Adrian Peterson to go to the Department of Family and Children Services. And I guess my biggest question is at any given time, and also with the 2013 case that was looming, at any time you felt that this child was in danger, why would you have done this? So now I begin to question some of the events that lead up to this. Could it have been taken overboard? Possibly. Was the intent there? I don't see it. I don't see it as something he tried to do intentionally. But again, you have this 2013 case and you're trying to mesh these two things together. I think what has to happen is that you have to allow the law and the judiciary system to play itself out before we begin to persecute and criticize and ostracize and talk about trade talks and all of these other things that are very scary probably right now to Mr. Peterson. And I think that's what should happen versus the NFL just quickly and rapidly coming to a conclusion about situations that are still open-ended right now.
I personally have some mixed feelings about it. I did get a chance to see the photos. I guess initially I went back to my own childhood and that my parents and some of my aunts and uncles would have certainly gone to jail under today's standards by some of the way that discipline happened for me as a child. I remember even having to go and pick my own switch. So, again, am I saying that it's right or that it wasn't excessive? No, I'm not. I think that, the kid was 4 years old, I believe it was, and they got into some areas of his body where he had some of these injuries that, I just don't understand how it could have progressed to that. But that being said, I agree with Coach Hill. At what point do we stop allowing the court of public opinion to dictate everything that happens in this? And I also now start to really question, and I think this is probably where this is going to end up kind of like the Ray Rice situation, and it's why Minnesota is now talking about trading him. If a lot of this evidence did already exist, someone even brought up the whole scenario about a child that he had that passed away under some similar circumstances, and there's some question about that now, even though it was already stated that it was the boyfriend of the girlfriend or the mother, I believe. But that being said, if you had this evidence and it wasn't presented at the time, how can you now come back and now it's this big deal? So I think it's going to end up firing or coming back on the NFL again about evidence withheld and whatnot. But now you've got the governor involved in saying that Peterson shouldn't be playing. Radisson has now pulled their sponsorship of the Vikings, and it's just going to continue to cascade, and I don't think we're going to address the true issue, which is, again, I like Coach Hill. I don't believe that the intent was there. I don't think we're talking about a monster, and he just wants to beat up on his kids. I think it was just, sometimes we are products of our environment and our raising. And he did state, hey, this was how I was done. So you tend to mimic what you were taught or what you were given. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I don't think Minnesota's going to trade him. I think they'd be stupid to trade him or foolish to trade him. However, I don't think this is going to end well for the NFL as well.
Yeah, and the thing that was brought up earlier today that I heard, in a way, it kind of goes back to Ray Rice. And these are completely separate incidents. They have nothing to do with each other except for they both are running backs in the league, and that this would not be as big of a deal had the Ray Rice issue not kind of blown up the way it did last week. Now, at the same, I'm right there with you guys on all this. I don't think he intended for it to go as far as it did. To a point, he doesn't think he really did anything wrong until suddenly people are starting to point and trying to explain to him what's going on, which is the smart thing to do. Instead of just screaming, yelling that you did something wrong, they're trying to explain to Adrian, you know, maybe that's not culturally acceptable anymore. But, yeah, I agree that at what point do we finally draw the line from celebrities or from anybody that this becomes such a full-blown issue that it's like the court of public opinion is now dictating how we handle issues with any kind of athlete or anything. At some point, the teams in the, or the NFL need to go, hey, this is our issue. This is between us and the legal system. This has nothing to do with anybody else.
Yeah, and even if you, I heard an interesting statement made by another friend that I was talking to about this and in reference to both cases, and again, not justifying either, but he mentioned, hey, if I were to do X or commit X offense, I still get to go up and go to work the next day. One has absolutely nothing to do with the other, barring all of the hey, we're in the court, we're in the spotlight, this, that, and the third. Which you know now it becomes protecting the shield as opposed to really dealing with the real issues. So that's where I'm concerned.
Yeah, and we'll, you know, monitor this, and as always, you can always, you know, follow us on the Facebook page or at 3endzone on Twitter, at the Impact 99, at ATL, how do you say that, Reggie?
It's ATLE, and it's an old Outkast moniker.
Okay. I thought it was a reference to that, but I wasn't sure. I had to, a lot of people don't realize Outkast are homegrown Atlanta talents, but you can follow us there for updates throughout the week and everything. Yeah, we're just going to follow this. I don't think they'll be able to trade him because for the same reason that they would try to get him off the team, why would the other 31 pick up somebody that either could, you know, could be suspended, could get a Ray Rice type suspension? I doubt it. But any kind of backlash that could happen against Adrian Peterson, why would you trade whatever high price they would ask to get a player that may never play for you? But as we move on, we just wanted to hit on the updates to the new drug policy and the possible reinstated players. It's still not passed up to at least this moment, and there was a list of about 20 players that would be reinstated if it were to pass in the next few hours. But that list has went down to 5 now, and we all pretty much know it would be, I believe, Skandrick and Wes Welker and a few of those guys. But have you guys heard any more about the policy or the reinstated players?
I mean, Josh Gordon, I've definitely heard that his could be, you know, dropped down to an 8-game suspension as opposed to the full year. Obviously, Wes Welker is back reinstated. The whole Greg Hardy incident and Coach Hill and I were kind of talking about that earlier. I think that we're going to probably see something so crazy out of that it's going to probably change again. But those are definitely the latest that I've heard.
I mean, I agree with Reginald. I think, you know, those players are the ones that are in the forefront of some things that are going to change. But again, the drug policy and the testing and the way they administer those tests now are going to most definitely radically change. I think you're probably going to see, you know, random testing more frequent than you have in the past. And I think that the testing now will be targeting a lot of specific things other than just the traditional things that you find in the testing.
Yeah, and as the drug policy, I was actually able to speak with a gentleman. He's a consultant as far as a lot of the drug and alcohol-related policies, and the NFL just so happens to be a client of the firm he's with. And what he does is they will travel down, like let's say, you know, they have particular regions. So let's say Jacksonville calls and says, hey, can one of your people come down on Thursday and, you know, kind of go over with some of the new guys and some of the other personnel you know, about alcohol abuse and DUIs and how they affect things and that kind of stuff. And so they send people down and they consult on that kind of stuff. So he was able to kind of add a little bit to all this. He said that as soon as the policy is kind of put into place, then they would get a hold of an actual copy to where they can break it down and kind of come up with their, I called it chemical education, but so that they can help educate a lot of these guys. And for the most part, when this thing passes, it's going to kind of affect the domestic violence policy as well. And I know, Coach, you brought it up earlier when we were talking, that I think there's, what'd you say, five people who possibly could be the first offenders of this new policy?
Yes, yes. I mean, again, you know, as we look at policies, and we talked about this in the very beginning of the show, is that policies are created as a result of something happening. And then at that point, policy is revamped because you have a consistency of current events. So the drug policy, as you can see, is now coming up again. I mean, the policy has already been there because we've had abuse. If you understand that, I told you, when you're looking at this issue of abuse, you have to look at it very, very cautiously due to the fact that, again, a lot of these players are playing with injuries and hurt and careers that are on the line. Again, it does not, and I do not, condone the abuse of any drug, whether it be alcohol, over-the-counter, or prescribed medications. But again, we're talking about players who have a warrior mentality and who also, on top of that, are really looking at their livelihoods. What are some of these guys going to do once this is all over? So it's something that the NFL also has to start really sitting down and not only with the educational piece, because they do have that in place, but really, really start looking at where is this fine line drawn between players pushing it too far, doctors pulling them out, trying to, you know, salvage some careers if possible, some that are on the verge of actually ending as a result of things they cannot control, and how the abuse affects all of that. That's my biggest concern with the policy. Again, once you start having consistency in an area and a light is shined there, then policy is going to be always brought back to the table. It's always going to be looked at to see if it's able to compete with the current violations that you have or new things that are being brought into the forefront. So again, let's just watch how this thing plays itself out, and I'm interested to see what they're going to do with it, you know, overall as they move forward, even into next year.
Yeah, that's kind of what the guy I spoke with, the gentleman I spoke with, said as well, is that they don't address the domestic violence stuff so much. They could in the future, but mainly they're about the chemical stuff and all. But he said, you know, really pay attention to the way this is going to pan out, because as soon, you know, from the first time it happens, it's usually about getting it on paper and getting it written out so that people know if action A happens, then punishment A happens. If action B happens, it's punishment B. It's spelled out where there's actually something on paper, a schematic you can go by, where before it was kind of, you had to go case by case, and that's what's kind of got Goodell in some of the hot water he's in now. But as we progress through the end zone show, right now I want to hit on the injury roundup and kind of tell you about some of the bigger ones and what we've heard up to this point and if we think it's a big deal or not a big deal. And, you know, clearly first, let's start with RG3, who at one point looked like his ankle wanted to split off and be a separate being. That was a pretty gruesome injury, and once again, it's another leg-related ligament as far as his playing career is going. Is this a big injury?
I think it is. I think it's big for a couple of reasons. But more importantly, I mean, everybody saw how Kirk Cousins played in that game, and I personally have always thought that Kirk Cousins would be a better fit for that Jay Gruden offense. But Kirk Cousins showed a lot more ability than RG3 ever really did, for me anyway. So I think it's going to be – I think we have seen the last of RG3 as the starting quarterback for the Washington Redskins personally.
You know, I think that, you know – he's still in his learning phase. RG3 sells tickets, but now I don't know if that is the case that would allow him back to the field. I think the injuries that – I think personally, as a coach, when I look at RG3, I think he came back way too fast, to be honest. I think he did a lot of rapid and aggressive rehabilitation, but I don't think he was healthy.
Yeah, Coach, I agree. I mean, I agree with that, but winning sells tickets, and at least for Washington right now. And this guy, I liken it to the whole Matt Schaub, Mike Vick situation, kind of, sort of, and that, you know, during that time, there was always this back and forth about, and not necessarily from a race perspective, but just from an abilities perspective, and who produced when put in the situation. Mike Vick obviously had a lot more success throughout his years here, but RG3 just hasn't shown me anything. And is he now being coined as that guy that's always hurt, you know, in the areas that has made him different in his ability to run and make plays with his legs?
Well, and there's really kind of three things to look at with this situation. One, RG3 is trying to change his entire way he plays. He's always been kind of a scrambler runner. He's trying to become more of a pocket passer. The second thing is, in Jay Gruden's offense, as well as, well, this is kind of piggybacking off the first, but Kirk Cousins is the better fit in this particular setup. And the other thing was, to me, as long as Dan Snyder is the owner of the Redskins, and I, as far as I know, he's going to be for the foreseeable future for sure. He's an RG3 guy. He made what was the coach before this? Shanahan?
Right,
yeah.
Shanahan.
He made Shanahan draft RG3 when Shanahan clearly wanted Kirk Cousins, so he went ahead and drafted both of them. So as long as Snyder's in charge, RG3 is going to be a Redskin, I believe. And let me see if I remember the third thing. I'll remember in a minute. I'm sure I will. But, I know what it is. And the thing you brought, like the case you brought up with Vic and Schaub, when a starting quarterback struggles, the backup always becomes the fan favorite. And that's kind of what you may run into, especially if Cousins comes in and starts playing really well. When RG3 comes back, now you're going to have to start splitting the fan base off. It may split the locker room as well as to who should start. But for some reason, when the starter struggles, the fans always get into the backup, and we'll hear his name chanted every time he's not in.
Yeah, I agree. I think with RG3, I mean, it's no question that the young man is a very good quarterback. I think the problem that he has is that he comes in under a head coach who's more depending on the run and did a lot of zone blocking and was a big running back type guy. That's what Shanahan is known for all those years he spent in Denver, even though he had Elway there. I mean, their running game is what sustained them a lot of the times. With this, you know, he goes from this type of offense into a brand new type of offense under Jay Gruden. You must understand Jay's background. Jay was a fierce competitor, a 7-time world champion in arena football. He's about getting the ball in and out of your hands. And I think that's something that's a little bit different for RG3. I think, again, he's trying to flush the old offensive coordinator's way of doing things and adopt this new one, on top of, again, him really being pushed last year to the point of, you know, basically a season-ending injury that very well could have cost him his career. That's why I lean back on the injury. I think if he's healthy, he's not so panicky, in a sense, of trying to make things happen to mask the injury. I think, really, Cousins, it wouldn't be wrong to let Cousins play right now for a while, if you will, so that he can just simply get healthy. I think we have not seen a true healthy RG3 as of yet.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that, and I agree that he keeps coming back too soon. But moving on, we have the cornerback out of Chicago, Charles Tillman, tore a tricep muscle, and not only is he done for the year, but it's being reported that depending on how, you know, if he can come back from this, it may be the last time we see him play in the league. Now, he came out earlier today, just a few minutes ago, and said this won't be the end of him, but apparently this is a pretty significant injury.
Yeah, I did read something about that, and the gist of the article was simply, you know, if this is the end of his career, it is certainly a very well-documented career as a Chicago Bear, and he should be able to hold his head high. Again, I'm all for players that just don't push the envelope. When it's time. It's an ugly injury for somebody at that stage of his career. So I'm hoping he does the right thing for his own personal health.
Likewise, that's the biggest thing as a coach is, you know, you most definitely don't want to challenge a player's toughness or his ability to want to be on the field and play. But again, at this point, your health is the most important thing. And I would rather see him retire his career with his body of work. And everybody understands this. I mean, you know, true fans, coaches alike. I mean, again, this injury could be something that he might not be able to bounce back from. And, if it's that time, then make the right decision for your health beyond football and not just for right now.
Yep, and that's a great point as we transition into the next guy, John Abraham, as he's coming back from a concussion. Bruce Arians, his head coach, says that not only will he join them this week, but there's a good chance he'll play this weekend. Now, it's been documented that Abraham has said he suffers from certain memory loss and memory-related things. At some point, should somebody get in his ear about, thinking about the future?
Well, and I'll speak a little bit on in some of my recap in the next hour, half hour of the hour. But at some point, again, this is when I feel like the league has kind of lost its way. This guy obviously has a very real condition, and I just don't understand. If we're going to talk morality when it comes to domestic violence and child abuse and drug use and all of these other things, what culpability does the NFL and other professional leagues have when it comes to, guiding these players in the right way when they try to come back and do things that is going to make quality of life for them terrible in their latter years? I really don't get this.
I don't see Arizona playing it. I really don't see any coach taking into consideration all of the things that he has volunteered and information about himself, coupled with medical reports, which have been extensive, I'm sure, and a history that they're going to play him. I think he returns back to the team as a part of the veteran status and being a veteran player, but I realistically don't see him hitting the field because at this point, it's just designed to fail at this point. I don't see where he's going to be even the player he once was. I mean, we all know that, every player dies hard in their career. And I use that term figuratively speaking, not literally. But with that being said, I mean, he's already saying he's suffering from these things. So if he's suffering from those things, why would you risk him out in the field of play? So, again, I think that he comes back to the team. I would not activate him anytime soon unless there, I could get, again, and we spoke of this before, it would have to be a lot of neurologists, a lot of people in the medical profession who are experts, by the way. They would have to be experts in this field, and I would have to get a lot of opinions as an owner, if I'm the owner of the Arizona Cardinals, on even if this is feasible. So I just would not activate him and would want to activate him as a coach right now.
Right, because you don't want to be the guy that made the call that caused further damage to a great guy like John Abraham. And I know I speak for both you guys. We're all fans of his body of work, and I think, Reggie, you said he's one of your favorite Falcons. I would have to agree. I always enjoyed watching him suit up. And I really don't want something bad to happen, and I feel like if he continues on, that's the path he's headed for. But moving on to the last two we'll get to tonight, and we'll hit them real quickly. Two guys with high ankle sprains and two completely different analysis of it. You got tight end Mercedes Lewis down in Jacksonville. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. I don't know if he's going to have a procedure or not. I believe they're just going to keep him off of it for the most part. And then running back Jamaal Charles for Kansas City has the same high ankle sprain, and from what I'm hearing, they're going to just keep it kind of a week-to-week basis. Last time I checked, a high ankle sprain is a pretty serious thing. Which of these do you think is the biggest deal for these teams?
I personally think Jamaal Charles, obviously, one of the top-tier running backs in the league, although the guy behind him did a decent job. That's definitely a significant decrease from the Chiefs' offense. Although Lewis is, you know, until Marcus Lee and some of these other guys kind of get into the fold, he's obviously a big part of the Jacksonville offense as well. But I definitely think Charles is the bigger loss.
I agree. I think Charles is the biggest loss. I think that, you know, Jacksonville still needs a lot of work in a lot of areas. That's taking nothing from Mercedes. I think he has to fight for a job in Jacksonville, whereas Charles has solidified one, and there's a big impact when you don't have him in the game as your premier running back.
Yeah, even though Charles' backup did do pretty well, and it shows you how good a system Andy Reid has in place there and a good offensive line. I'll speak more on Mercedes Lewis in this week's Jaguar show, but I feel like Lewis needed to have a really great year to possibly keep a spot on this team, and I feel like this injury here may kind of help open the door further for him moving on, or at least the team moving on from them. And, I mean, he's a super good guy, but, you know, being a good guy and performing at the level you need to is not always the same thing. I hope both of them are able to bounce back from this. But, yeah, by far, Charles is the biggest injury. But I'll hit two quick stories real quick. Didn't know if you guys have heard the story of Devin Still. He plays for Cincinnati Bengals. He's a defensive lineman. And initially they were keeping him on the practice squad so that he could keep benefits for his 4-year-old daughter who has cancer. And she's been going through all the treatments and everything else like that. And then he actually got to suit up and play in the game. I don't know if you saw him in the game, Reggie, but he got to suit up for the game. And they've come up with these Still Strong shirts that you can buy for $25, 15 of which goes to his funds to help his PLDGIT campaign to help children's hospitals in Cincinnati and Philadelphia. And also, if you buy one of his jerseys for $100, 50 goes to Cincinnati Children's Hospital and pediatric cancer care and research. And not only there's actually an added part to that. Sean Payton, head coach of the Saints, was so moved by Devin's story, he bought 100 of his jerseys. I don't know what he did with them, but he bought 100 of the jerseys just to help donate the money and get the cause up and going. And then the other story I was going to hit was somewhere on the page. Did you guys hear about the Devin Still thing?
Absolutely I did. I actually got a chance to shake that young man's hand after the game, and I also did purchase three of the Steel Strong shirts. I don't know if I got the sizes correct, because I figured you guys, it's funny that we're definitely on the same page. I figured you guys would be talking about that. So I actually did purchase three of those shirts as well while I was there. And there was a loud cheer for him. He had a couple of tackles, but he had one a little bit late in the game when Atlanta was kind of backed up in the end zone. He deflected a pass or did something routine, and then the stadium just kind of lit up. I definitely did hear about this guy. And I think that was a wonderful gesture by the Cincinnati Bengals. That's the type of things that I was talking about. And where's the culpability with the NFL in protecting not only the shield, but the players behind the shield?
Yes, I agree. I did get a chance to hear about his story. I thought it was very commendable that the Bengals organization allowed him to stay on the team and with the team, considering the huge amount of financial cost it is to treat a cancer patient, but just any patient that is suffering from those type of diseases. And I just find it very commendable that the team has stood behind him, that the NFL, as far as Sean Payton, went as far as he did to buy shirts and jerseys and things of that nature to get his cause up and running. I just think that those are the things you need right now in the wake of, if this is the balance against all of the other things, that this is something that was brought to the forefront and was also supported. So I do commend anyone in the NFL and fans alike, whether you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan or not, but just a fan of football, but more importantly, a big supporter of this type of cause.
Yeah, this is one of the truly – oh, I did find the other story. I'll go over it real quickly. But, yeah, it's such a super good thing that not only – I mean, especially with Sean Payton stepping in and everything – it was real cool to see that, you know, here's a guy who could play against this team and play against this guy, and, you know, he puts this gesture out there that sometimes things are bigger than the game, and this is, you know, her battle. I hear she's doing pretty well. She was excited. She got to be on NFL Game Day, I believe. They featured her. She called her dad all excited, and he was able to break the news as well that he was going to play last week, that he just found out. But quickly, I don't know if you guys saw the San Francisco game. But I was super excited because of an injury. Jonathan Martin got the start at right tackle, I believe, and he did a superb job. I was highly impressed that he looks like he's been able to move on, and he's going to be a pretty good tackle for those guys.
Yeah, no, I didn't catch that, but that's good. Congrats for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that he needed, especially in the wake of all the things that happened earlier last year with him. He needed a fresh start, and he has that now. But also, I have a question for you guys. My understanding, and I just heard this from sources, that Kaepernick was fined for something. I don't know what was said, but obviously something went on the field, and he got a fine for something. Have any of you guys heard about that yet?
Yeah, I did hear about it. Apparently, he was fined for a verbal altercation that he had with one of the Chicago Bears players, in which apparently there was a racial epithet that was thrown out. But according to all of the film and everything that was being said on the sidelines and so forth and so on, they cannot find evidence of it. So now San Francisco is challenging it.
Okay. Thank you for that update, Rick.
Yeah, what basically happened was it's when he threw the interception, I forget the player he threw it to. When he threw the interception, the ball that was tipped and then intercepted, in frustration leaving the field, he has his mouthpiece in. You can see he yells something, but he looks like he's looking down as he does it, and then he rips his helmet off and as he's walking to the sideline. For the life of me, I watched the video about 12 times. I don't know what he said, and all the referee would say is he knows what he said. So, you know, unless one or the other tells us, we're not going to know. On the other side here in just a few short seconds will be Falcon Zone, and like I said, the In the Zone trivia hint is the number 63, and the hint that it has to do with a Cincinnati Bengals player. We'll let you guys ponder on that for a few seconds, and we'll see you here in a minute. Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
Falcon Zone.
And we're here for the Falcon Zone. I'm Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy. Doing good.
Doing great, Jeremy.
You know, clearly we're gonna get your take, Reggie, on being up there at the game. We're going to talk about the updated injuries that we know of. We're going to preview the Thursday night battle in the Dome and a couple other things. But first, we do want to start with the recap of that Falcons-Cincinnati game. Now, we all had Atlanta picked in that one. But two or three quick notes as to what each of you guys think actually happened then and why the game went the way it did. Reggie, we'll start with you. Or Coach, if you're ready as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute, Jeremy.
Okay, sorry.
Backing off of Coach Hill. They had a very intense game with the rival New Orleans Saints the week before, overtime game, pulling it out in the end, up on this natural high, extreme high. And even in some of my observations from the sideline, they seemed just very lackluster, not very into the game. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of focus, coupled with the fact that one of the things that I think Atlanta is going to have to contend with, and Coach Hill and I also spoke about this a little earlier, is Atlanta has a problem outside the dome. You definitely noticed the decline in speed. There was one pass play, a play-action pass, where Matt Ryan came back into his seven-step drop, and tripped over his own, you know, feet or the turf monster, whatever you want to call it. Consequently, he had Julio about 10 steps ahead of Leon Hall on the right side of the field. So it was just a combination of just a lot of lackluster play. I can't put it any other way. I can't put it any other way nicely. They had no running game. They couldn't stop the run. They were gambling on passes. I mean, it was just bad all the way around. Did we lose Coach Hill?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. It was the thing that I spoke of last week. If you guys remember, I said the big F word, focus. Focus is the hardest thing to do to come off a rival game, not to mention that this game went into the fifth quarter called overtime. Coupled with some of the little small injuries that they had, I told you that, you know, Cincinnati was the game. You know, I didn't want to see it happen, but in the back of my mind, I had pretty much called that Cincinnati would probably win the game, and it was based on just that. I think Atlanta just shot their load, basically, against New Orleans. And with that being said, there were some players that, and again, I think Coach Smith has to really start taking this into consideration early. You have to play the players who are healthy, and you have to play the players who are productive. And that can't have anything to do with numbers unless he's being arrested by those numbers from the standpoint of a general manager. But again, I saw productivity in other areas where players should have been playing, in my opinion, and some players that were on the field that were just being very – they just didn't have any production in them at all. And so now that trip home – because here's how it plays out, guys, after a game like this. You immediately go in, you take a shower, you do your media part of it, you hurry up and get on the charter buses, you head immediately back to the airport – and you're on a plane that is basically sectioned out, okay, and you don't put on the headsets and take a nap. You immediately start watching the film. So you relive this game immediately within the next 30, 45 minutes of your flight. I'm sure that it was discussed that you were supposed to stay focused. You have to stay focused. You can't afford to find yourself in these type of slumps or battles. And I think, and I have to tip my hat to the defensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals. He did a very good job of disguising a lot of things. I think Matt Ryan forced a lot of balls in that game. Again, I think the defense of Atlanta played really well. considering that there were a lot of field goal attempts on Cincinnati's end that had they turned into touchdowns, I mean, the game would have been so far out of reach, it wouldn't matter who played in the game. It just wouldn't have mattered. They wouldn't have had an opportunity in it. So I think that, you know, again, coming off, though, if you go back and look at all of the games in week one where they played and you had some upsets and some rivals and some things like that, all of those teams played bad the very next week, or poorly. I shouldn't say bad, but poorly. But this week now, it's going to determine whether or not what type of team Atlanta has, because now you have this short week. You come off a rival game. You lose to Cincinnati, which is kind of predictable in a sense. Now you have the short week. You have a division rival in Tampa Bay, and this game along with the next game is going to really start setting the pace of what Atlanta truly is made for, made of in its core. So I'm interested to see what comes out of this with them now.
Yeah, and I'll make a couple quick points, and I feel like, Reggie, since you were there, I feel like we're going to walk the line here in a few minutes. So I'll make a couple quick points, and then I will turn it over to you because I feel like you're going to have some really good points here in a minute. Quick observations. I saw Matt Ryan threw the ball way too much. I felt like they didn't really try to give the run game enough of a chance, even though the front seven for the Bengals are one of the top front sevens in the league. Dalton didn't throw as much. He threw 23 times. Matt Ryan threw 44. To me, a good quarterback on a good day should throw somewhere in between there, around 30. I don't understand if Devin Hester is emerging as this great wide receiver, how he only had one catch for 2 yards. And I'll give Harry Douglas credit. When he took that shot out of bounds, that hard hit he took where he stayed down for a few minutes, I don't blame him for not really wanting to have my head in the game after that, because he took just a hell of a shot. And I felt bad for him at that point, because the Atlanta guys didn't know it because he was on the other sideline. But, yeah, like you said, Coach, Mike Nugent, the fact that he left 9 points on the field and didn't put them through the uprights actually made this to where it was only a 14-point deficit, where, I mean, clearly it could have been 23 points ahead as well. Like I said, the Bengals front seven played pretty well. They were able to get a lot of run yards out of Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, which is part of their strategy as well. Andy Dalton only threw one touchdown, but, you know, 15 for 23 for 252, I think any quarterback would about take that. It was probably close to what Aaron Rodgers had this week as well, and he won. But, like I said, yeah, the defense did play a little better and everything. But, Reggie, if you're ready, I'm going to let you walk the line here.
I have one thing just before we go there, yep. Reginald. I'm sure my friend and your friend, Mr. Icky Woods, was gloating and just all smiles with Cincinnati beating Atlanta and you having an opportunity to visit with him.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I was going to say, Jeremy, just before we walk the line here. Coach Hill, thank you for introducing me to the great Icky Woods. He was a tremendous, tremendous individual and a great person to be around. We didn't get a chance to connect before the game, although we did speak when I arrived in Cincinnati. But after the game, he actually gave me a call to start gloating, by the way. And one of the people that I had actually gone to the game with, obviously their entire family have been Bengals fans forever. She was a tremendous fan of his and was really anxious to meet him. And he actually took time out. He and his daughter, Allegra, took time out to actually come to my friend Amanda's house and sit with the family. He ate dinner with us. He hung out. He watched football. We just had some great, great times. And, of course, about 75% of that time, he spent talking about how the Bengals had just beat up on the Falcons. So, again, shout out to Icky Woods, man. We enjoyed you. We got some things that we're going to connect with. I'll speak a little bit more about his foundation. I did find some stuff out about that for his son that passed away from asthma at the age of 16, so he does have a foundation. I'm going to be working with him to kind of get his web presence up, and we're working on doing a fundraiser up in the Cincinnati area in support of his foundation. But again, Coach Hill, thank you for introducing him to me. He is a great individual.
Oh, you're welcome.
And before we walk the line, I just want to say, in his gloating, did he say if he's going to have some cold cuts today?
Well, you know what was funny is while we were sitting there watching football, his commercial actually came on. So an interesting fun fact about that commercial, he did mention that that whole cold cuts line as well as the yell was an improv on his end. It was not actually scripted. And when he did it, it fit so well in with the commercial that Geico decided to keep it. So I thought that was interesting.
Wow.
That's my new favorite commercial anyway, not just because you just met him and everything. When I saw that, I was like, oh, there's Icky Woods. And then I see the commercial, and I was like, Geico continues to bring it.
Right, right. He said he had an absolute great time out in L.A. filming that. And he had just some very interesting conversations. So hopefully we'll get some chance on the next show, one of the future shows, to kind of talk to him. I did speak to him about coming on to the show, and he said he'd be more than welcome, or more than happy to join us and maybe talk about a little bit of that stuff himself.
Absolutely, at any time. But, Reggie, if you're ready, you ready to walk the line?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know if anybody else is ready, but Reggie's about to walk the line.
All right, guys, my walk the line. First of all, let me start by saying that my comments do not reflect the Impact Zone, Jeremy York, or Coach Haywood Hill's actual opinion. But we're going to get started. If the Atlanta Falcons really want to be taken seriously, it is time for Arthur Blank to do the right thing by the city and by the team and remove what I feel to have been the problem the entire time, and that is head coach Mike Smith. Why does Atlanta have to continue to be the graveyard for has-been talent with ridiculous contracts? How long before Arthur Blank speaks out on Mike Smith's apparent disdain for playing rookie players regardless of their potential impact? Let us look at the history of dynasty franchises. From a personnel perspective, dynasty teams were either built by rising free agents and or player superior development. Jimmy Johnson, Bill Belichick, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, are all examples of coaches that could A, pick surprise impact players, and B, manage to get championship caliber play out of them almost instantaneously. Well, Smitty, you have not. You have kept players like Antone Smith and Jonathan Massaqua in the shadows of Steven Jackson's and the Croy Biermans for far too long. How many games do we have to watch 2 and 3 yard games or complete games without so much as a mention of Bierman on the tackle, much less Bierman on the sack? And where has this gotten this team? Does it make sense that defensive coordinator Mike Nolan referred to Prince Shimbo as a very special talent, only to see him play a minimal amount of snaps on this past Sunday? Does it make sense that Devontae Freeman averaged 7 yards per carry against first-team defenses, yet didn't have one single carry this past Sunday? How long will we keep blaming our team troubles on breakdowns or scheme or refs slowing down the game or any other futile excuse other than your inability to manage, better yet, allow your position coaches to manage the personnel and their responsibility in the overall game plan? I'm starting to believe that Atlanta doesn't suffer from a lack of viable talent. We suffer from a head coach with a lack of viable vision. Somebody get me John Gruden's number, please. And this is Reggie walking the line.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tide that's fine. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Wow, I'm in total agreement with that, but at the same time, I always like how both you guys bring it in the new segments we've been doing, What's the Deal with Coach Hill, and also Walking the Line with Reggie Walker. And after that one, Atlanta fans, I think you should buy a helmet for this game, because there was some shrapnel being thrown around right there, and I think it's much needed. And like I said, I actually agree with you, Reggie.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy, it's ridiculous. And Coach Hill kind of alluded to it in his comments a little earlier in his recap. I mean, it's just it's ridiculous at this point where you are seeing guys out there with lackluster effort because they know that their positions aren't being challenged. And you got guys like Prince Shimbo who obviously brings passion in every time he steps on the field. Devontae Freeman, Jonathan Mascua, these guys are sitting on the sidelines when we are in need of playmakers. And it's tiresome to continue to watch. It's tiresome to continue to hear the same excuses year in and year out about why we don't have what we need to be successful in all phases of the game. And I think it's just time. It's time for somebody to take a long, hard look and some of the decisions that are being made outside of the player personnel.
Now,
one of the things.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. One of the things I like to comment on, if you guys don't mind, and that is this: professional athletes, regardless of the sport, are paid. I'm sorry, to perform. Now, that doesn't matter whether you're in one play of the game. Well, you're going to be in for three quarters of the game, okay? You are paid to perform. And when you're on the field of play, whether that's, again, baseball, football, basketball on the court, you are there to do your job. You have been evaluated as one of the best talents out there to be able to play at that high level. So, again, let's just take one thing into consideration, okay? And I don't know all of the infrastructure of the Atlanta Falcons, so I can't speak on specifics. But what I will speak on is an example of challenging positions. Now, let's look at how Atlanta beat New Orleans, their, you know, just infamous rival, and that's the game you just have to win, as it would be compared to Georgia Tech or Auburn, Alabama, or any of those type of things that you see on the college rankings. Atlanta wins this game not just based on adrenaline, not just based on it being a rival, but based on challenging. They beat them based on a committee of running backs who at any given time go in and they perform when their number is called. Now, go and look at that. Now, you have to take that across the board, because when Jake Matthews goes out of the game, when Matthews goes out, they plug right in and they plug and play with the next guy. And they don't even think twice about it. They keep moving. So you have to challenge your team as a coach. And I'm not saying that Coach Smith is not doing this, because, again, I don't know all the intricacies of why this guy can't play or why that guy can't play. But let me tell you how the roster is set from week to week, guys. The position coach is responsible at looking at his position and looking at the personnel he has at that position, okay? Each week, his boss, called the coordinator, comes to him and asks him, who are the better players right now? Who is stepping up? Who's falling off? How are you evaluating them based on what are the metrics that is given to them to evaluate those players at their position? He makes a suggestion. That's all the position coach can do, is make a suggestion. At that point, he takes that suggestion to his boss, i.e. the offensive coordinator or defense coordinator. With that being said, a recommendation is formed, okay, by the coordinators when they meet with the head coach. They meet with the head coach and say, hey, coach, we've had an opportunity to meet with our position coaches. These are the better players right now. Based on the scheme, based on what we've been able to see on the film, we're making a recommendation that this player is assigned to the 53-man roster. Okay, at that point, injuries aside, the head coach has to then sit down and set his roster, because that's what he has to take to the field of play and battle with, whether a player is going to get this amount of playing time, that amount of playing time, based on contract negotiations and things of that nature. He then has to also couple all of that and present it to a general manager. Well, this guy's going to play because his contract states X, Y, and Z. So these are all the things that frustrate a coach as well. But at the end of the day, the head coach has to sometimes get bloody and make a decision that I'm going with this guy. Now, understand that his job is to manage the game, and also he is the only person that can pull a player. An offensive coordinator can scream up and down. He can have this ugly look on his face to make animal crackers and cookies. But I'm telling you guys, the only person that can pull them, call the fourth down play, and make those kind of decisions, whether you go for one point or two, is the head coach. So inevitably, this falls back on Coach Smith. I hope that this week he's taking some of those things into consideration outside of injury, and he will go and look at that film and take a hard look at who played hard, who didn't, and who deserved more playing time.
Yeah, and just to throw these out there, just because of rumors I've heard, the short list, in case Mike Smith were be let go. Just rumors I've heard from various things, and if you guys have heard something you can say something or not say something, but the two names, it's a pretty prominent list, but the two that really struck me was John Gruden is on that list, and in the odd, dumb chance, which, depending on their performance this year, it could happen, if Pittsburgh lets Mike Tomlin go, apparently Mike Tomlin could be at the top of this list as well. And Reggie, as the bigger fan of the three of us that you are, how do you feel about those two guys?
Well, I think both of them fit, to be honest with you. I like Mike Gruden. I like John Gruden, obviously, because of what he brings to the quarterback position. I think he would be that guy that could help take Matt Ryan to the next level. I like Mike Tomlin's going back to John Gruden. I also like the thing about John Gruden that Coach Hill just mentioned. John Gruden could care less who plays. Give me the best players, and we're going to go out here and play. And I think the same thing holds true with Mike Tomlin. I think Atlanta needs an attitude adjustment. On the sidelines, one of the things that I did see was there was an very obvious confrontation between Brian Cox and William Moore after very late in the game. The confrontation started with William Moore and Rashid Hageman having words, and there was actually a point where players and coaches had to hold back Brian Cox from William Moore, and it's those types of breakdowns. It's those types of attitude issues that we're having that is causing the issues, and I think that we're going to have one of those types of guys to come in. I've often made a comment one time before that I think the Atlanta Falcons are much like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back under Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy came in, he built the team, he wasn't able to take them anywhere. John Gruden came in and just provided that one element that took them into the Super Bowl and were able to win. I think Atlanta is at that position. We have the talent. We have the players. We're missing the attitude. And you can talk toughness all you want to. You can go bring in the Mike Tysons and the Brian Coxes and the Mike Nolans. But if you got that guy at the top that doesn't understand that concept of play, that's where you're having your problem. So I wouldn't have any problem with either one of those guys, Jeremy.
And Coach, I know, without giving any sources or any inside information that you may have and, protecting any kind of connection you may have, do you have any thoughts on either of those two guys?
Honestly, I think it'll be Gruden. I think he's been out of football for a while. He's been itching to get back in. I don't think that it's because it's a lack of interest in Coach Gruden. I think he wants to pick the best situation for himself and his family. I think that a Gruden type of mentality coming into Atlanta pushes them directly right over the top, because I don't think anybody's going to be tougher than he will be on his players and his coaching staff and demand these high qualities out of them. Again, I take nothing from Tom. If he comes to Atlanta, I think you get some of the same thing out of him. I think just the difference right now is because Gruden has been out of football for a few years, that he becomes more attractive in his ability just to be fresh back into the system. But I don't think you go wrong with either one of those coaches. I think Atlanta wins with both of them. But I think personally, I think they have their eyes on Gruden. I think he's proven that in the past. I think he says it in his commentating on the air. And you can still hear that football type of intensity in his voice. And I think if he comes to Atlanta, Matt Ryan has to do one of two things, either play and understand that you have to play at this level every day, every practice, every snap, and not just Matt Ryan, but every player. He doesn't have a problem with benching you. He doesn't have a problem with trading you if you want to go. He will bring in somebody that wants to play. He will play with a bunch of no-name guys, but I promise you he will have them achieve. So, again, Coach Smith has to now really assess where he is in all of this, and you can't just scream and holler now at this point because that has never been part of your makeup. But at this point, go and look at what worked against New Orleans. You had a running back by committee. You plugged and played those guys, and they realized that, hey, this job is still open. I think some players have gotten a little too comfortable in feeling that they have secured their jobs. Understand, this is week to week, guys. This is not year to year. You have a contract, and if you go look at USA Today and any of the top news outlets around the world, someone in professional sports is being released and someone is being signed every day. So Atlanta needs to really look at it. Don't be afraid to play other players is all I'm saying. Is, you know, you got the talent there. If guys are not producing, you pay those guys to perform regardless of how much money they're making. You're there to win football games because your job depends on it.
Exactly. And as we're in the last few minutes here, we're going to try to give you a brief preview of the upcoming Thursday night football game. Like I said, I know, Reggie, you'll probably be there. I know I'll be there. Coach, if you're in the area, you'll probably drop by as well. So, you know, if you get it, if you're out that way, try to find us or tweet us and send us a message. We'd love to meet you guys and hang out and talk about how much we like the Falcons. Or if you want to yell at us for something we said, that's fine. But the notable injuries so far, Jake Matthews' ankle seems to be okay. I believe he's going to play Thursday. Roddy White sat out practice again today with his hamstring. I believe he'll go too, even if he's 70%. Julio's ankle, foot, whatever it officially is, I've heard three different reports. I think it's the same situation here. I think they're going to rest it a little bit. Both those guys are going to play. The reason Shembo may not have played so much, apparently he has a knee injury. I don't know how severe it is, but it kept him out of part of practice. But talking about the Buccaneers-Falcons game on Thursday Night Football here in the Dome, I'll start with you first, Coach. What are you looking forward to in this matchup?
Well, just to be quite honest, Jeremy, I'm looking for Atlanta to come out and be the Atlanta that played the New Orleans Saints. At this point, you have the injuries there. You don't play a player at 70%. If these guys can't go at 100%, you pull them off your roster right now, you sit them down for a week so they can rest, reevaluate them on Monday, and move forward. But I think Atlanta has enough receivers there, even on their practice roster, who've shown a lot of great talent in preseason. Get these guys ready because, see, what you don't want to face is losing a Roddy White now for three more weeks due to a severe hamstring pull. You don't want to find yourself losing now Julio Jones again for the season. So don't push it. If these guys, if they're injured, that's one thing. If they're hurt, it's another. So if these are legitimate injuries that are being documented by the team physician and you got to be held out of practice, you know, two or three, I mean, this is a short week. I mean, you don't have time to not play with healthy players or players that are halfway healthy. Just go ahead and put those guys down for this week because it's a short week. Find out what else you have on your team now. Challenge those positions now. Now, that doesn't mean you're challenging the guy because he's injured, because he simply just can't play. But, guys, you go back and you look at it and you give hardcore assessments and you grade them critically and you make those decisions and say not only is it injury, not only, but it's also poor play that makes these decisions. And I think Atlanta has enough of that talent. And I've always said this for the last 2 years. They have enough talent on the sideline, but normally what happens with teams like Atlanta, and they're not just the only team that is guilty of this, guys leave their organization, go somewhere else and become superstars, and you'd be like, I remember when we had this guy. All I like to do is mention in the backdrop of all of this, just remember Brett Favre.
All right, Reggie, what are you looking forward to?
I am actually looking forward to seeing how the defense is going to perform. I am not concerned about the offense. I think they get back on track. I think Matt Ryan, believe it or not, despite a lot of what was said about the Cincinnati game, he was the only offensive player out there of the starters that I felt like was actually really trying to win that game on Sunday out of everybody, Roddy and Julio included. But that being said, I don't have a problem with the offense. I want to see the defense stop this run. I don't think we have a problem with Josh McCown throwing the ball all over the field, even though they've got Vincent Jackson, who obviously can get behind the defense. Offer played absolutely horrible in his last game. But, however, I want to see what kind of pass rush we can generate, what type of how we're going to address this run with Rainey and as well as Doug Martin is actually slated to come back as well. And I also am anxious to see the offensive line and how they protect against Tampa Bay's front four.
Yeah, I think the key is to stopping the running attack. And nothing personal, but it's Josh McCown is their quarterback. I mean, it might as well be Mike Glennon. It's as far as skills, he's a little better than Glennon, but he's still a backup. I mean, he's the best option for them down there. But I mean, it's not like this guy's going to torch you. It's like a Matt Flynn situation. He's more of a game manager. He's not going to throw 350 yards or something like that on a given day. That being said, the matchup I am looking forward to the most, Warren Sapp come out this week and has nicknamed these three particular guys the Tampa Bay Dunkaneers, and that's because they are all 6'5", about 250 or so apiece, and that is wide receivers Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, and tight end Austin Seferian Jenkins. And these guys are super big. They give super big targets. But to me, the people that are going to match up with them is going to be Robert Alford, it's going to be William Moore, and it's going to be Desmond Trufant, I believe, is going to be who they're going to go one-on-one with. And that's going to be a juggernaut of a fight for sure, and I anticipate that. I do think this game is going to be really tight. It's always really tight. All the division games are super close. I don't know. I hope, because it's on a Thursday night, that doesn't go to overtime, because I'm not sure how late MARTA runs. But, no, that's a inside joke for Atlanta people. I think this is going to be a really close game. But I do feel like if there was ever a stage set up for Matt Ryan to step up and pull out another week one performance, it's right now against the Buccaneers, just to say, hey, we had a small little mishap, small little blip on the map with Cincinnati. We're still going to dominate our division, and that's pretty much where I see it going.
It's going to be a good one, guys. It's going to be a good one. I expect to see Atlanta come out with a lot of energy, and we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree with you, Reginald. I think that at this point that if Atlanta's not careful, and I think they've learned their lesson through the Cincinnati game, that if you don't come out with that same level of intensity week to week, you will find yourself playing down to a level of competition that is below the standard that you've set for yourself. So I think sometimes you can just defeat yourself. And I think just naturally, because they've lost in the game and so close, they can quickly eradicate a lot of the issues that they had in Cincinnati with just a win. But this is not just a win. This is a divisional opponent. And keep in mind, they have Lovie Smith down there as their head coach. He's watched this team. He knows what can happen. He's got his eye on David Hester. So all these things also factor in. Atlanta better come out quick, fast, and in a hurry. And if not, they're going to find themselves in a fight. And halftime will prove it if they're not pulling away coming out at the beginning of the third quarter to put Tampa Bay away. If you remember me saying earlier, teams that you must beat them convincingly. And Cincinnati is one of those teams that I felt, still to this day, I felt that they just didn't have all of the pieces together. They have the defense. They really didn't have a whole lot of the offense there in place, but they did enough. And Atlanta allowed them to hang around. When the defense did stop them, they just didn't put points on the board.
Yeah, I think that's a good point as well. But quick news and notes as before we get out of here. I know I just retweeted it, but Reggie, you actually put out on your Twitter account, @Leanne73, that you can purchase the Still Strong shirts to support Devin Still and his daughter and the foundation and everything. We'll have a lot of that information posted up where you'll know where you can go get those shirts. Definitely, it's a good story. If you don't want a shirt, there's still places you can donate and other ways you can help. Next week, we should be joined by Devin Richardson from TurfTalkPro.com, giving some fantasy advice. And he's a good friend of mine and everything. They do some good stuff at their site and Facebook page and everything. We should have him on. I know a lot of you guys have asked about fantasy. We all play fantasy as well. And hopefully we can all give you some pretty good tips. So Devin should be joining us. Shout out to him and the page and everything. But
I got one more thing, Jeremy, if I can.
Yeah.
I was able to find Icky Woods Foundation. It is JovanteWoodsFoundation.org. That's JovanteWoods Foundation.org. Go out there and support a great cause.
Yeah, definitely. Go support those Bengal causes and everything, because at the end of the day, it's about a lot more than football. But for the Coach Haywood Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.